So let's talk about distal femur fractures. So distal femur fractures are almost always operative injuries, right? They're, you know, weight-bearing, articular injuries. So you really have to be familiar with, you know, surgical techniques, you know, when you do which approaches, et cetera. What are your surgical options? So here's where AO classification is particularly useful. This is the femur, so it's bone 1, 2, 3. It's the distal femur, so it's 33. But it's really the A, B, and C, you know, part that I think you need to pay attention to. So, you know, the A types are extra articular, you know, supracondylar, right? Periarticular fractures. Type B would be like a unicondylar fracture, either a HAFA or a medial or lateral condyle fracture. A type C is like a sort of like a T intercondylar, would be the simplest type. And then something that's much more, you know, comminuted would be like a C3. But the treatment is very much dictated by the AO classification in this case. So A-type fractures, supracondylars, can be treated with intramedullary nailing, retrograde intramedullary nailing, or plating. And with plating, the extra-articular fracture, potentially you can treat with minimally invasive plate osteosynthesis with like a, you know, locked condylar plate. Whether you decide to do minimally invasive, I think, has a lot to depend on the comminution of the fracture. So if you have a very simple fracture pattern, short oblique, let's say, then I think you either do a nail and you have relative stability, or if you're going to plate it, usually you're not going to just minimally invasive plate this. I mean, in my mind, this is the type of fracture that if it's a simple fracture, you're actually going to fully open that, compress it, reduce it, compress it, and get rigid anatomic fixation. You know, if you believe it all in strain theory of Perrin from the AO Davos, putting a rigid locked plate and a minimally invasive technique where you don't get good compression for a supracondylar fracture would be a very high strain situation. So keep in mind, locked plates are much more rigid than intramedullary nails. Therefore, my concern about creating a rigid situation in which you're not compressed. You know, when you open it, you can get anatomic reduction compression, and then you want to be rigid. Whereas if you have the comminuted fracture, that's an opportunity to do bridge plating, right? It's comminuted. You can do a minimally invasive technique. You can also do retrograde nailing. But you generally don't have to open the fracture site. You don't have to open the knee. You know, of course, you have to make a small opening to do a nail. But these are amenable to indirect reduction methods, right? So the B-type fractures are always opened, right? And you can say that for a lot of intra-articular B fractures, always opened. You know, if you want to fix a lateral condyle and you really want to see the joint, get it anatomic, you open it. Same thing medially. Same thing with a HAFA fracture, right? And with good bone, you can do potentially just screws alone, maybe a screw with a buttress washer for a unicondylar fracture. And with a HAFA fracture, it's, you know, usually going to be screws also. It's going to be like either headless compression screws or long screws from anterior to posterior to capture the fragment. So what about the C fractures? Well, a C1 fracture where you have a very simple split like a T intercondylar, those you can treat a couple different ways, right? You can certainly plate them, but you can do retrograde nailing on these. Now, you can reduce the condyles. You can put cannulated screws or whatever, some type of compression screws across in a peripheral fashion so that you leave room for a nail, and then you can do a retrograde nail. And that is a technique that's done. It can work. You just have to make sure that you have, you know, good enough fixation and that your nail has good enough locking fixation distally as well. And many of the nails now have a lot of options. It's probably worth mentioning, for if you're going to nail a distal femur fracture, especially if it's osteoporotic, you should have some type of advanced locking capability. You don't just want to use, you know, a regular, you know, retrograde nail with two screws. I mean, you want to consider either something with multiple screws distally, maybe a blade that can be locked. Whatever company you choose, you know, you should be thinking about what's that advanced locking for that poor metaphyseal bone, especially for that osteoporotic patient. Another word about retrograde nailing is keep in mind those really distal locking screws, and this is something I see often. Those really distal locking screws can sometimes be very prominent when the swelling goes down. So remember, the distal femur is trapezoidal. Get oblique x-rays at the end to make sure that virilely distal screw is not sticking out too much, because it will be very irritating, and you will end up having to take that patient back to get that screw out. So be careful. Now, moving along with the C-type fractures, you have the more comminuted intra-articulars. And, you know, and these have to be opened, have to be open reduced. I find myself using headless compression screws in a lot of these really comminuted ones sometimes, where you have especially these gunshot injuries. Locked plating works great here. Keep in mind, sometimes you have to do a medial plate, and almost all the periarticularly locked plates out there are lateral plates. So remember, if you need to do a medial plate and you really want a pre-contoured plate, there's not a lot of them out there, and they probably don't live in your hospital. But they do exist. Certainly non-locked medial periarticular plates do exist and can make your life a little bit easier. I generally like doing a full-on lateral parapatellar arthrotomy for these, with a somewhat of a midline incision, so that the skin retraction is a little bit easier. Retract all the vastus lateralis up and over the top, and you know, then you can flex the knee up if you need to get to a Hoffa fracture. This gives me great visualization of the articular surface. You can certainly provisionally pin things together. Lag screws, headless compression, whatever, and then fix the articular fragments to the shaft. Most of the time, you can move these patients relatively early. You know, the soft tissue envelope is usually not as much of a concern as it is in, like, the foot or ankle. You know, I think they can be good cases. You know, you obviously have to be very careful about rotational alignment, especially in these more comminuted fractures. I think that, you know, if you plate them, as most of you know, you usually are not going to weight bear these patients right away. One final word, in really complex injury patterns in which, you know, you have, let's say, really poor bone contact, and you're, you know, unhappy perhaps, or concerned about your, you know, fixation. I mean, you can sometimes do dual plating, something used to be done more often before we had locked plates. And there are hinged external fixators for the knee. Now, these potentially are helpful for many different situations: knee dislocations, soft tissue injuries. I've used them in patients with really osteoporotic bone that I'm a little concerned about the fixation perhaps. But, you know, you can potentially use a hinged external fixator across the knee. Let's say a patient had a spanning knee X fix to begin with, and then you do an ORAF, but you really, really need to protect their, the knee against stresses. So that is, an option out there if you really, really need it. But I don't think most of you will be dealing with that stuff on a regular basis. All right, that's all for this recording. Thanks for listening. Bye.